is Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. In the 1960s, anyone who was gay lived an essentially illegal existence. In fact, was even considered to be mentally ill. In 1969, New York City police raided the Stonewall Inn. This was a place where gay men socialized. The men fought back, and this became an iconic event in the gay rights movement. John O'Brien found himself in the midst of the Stonewall Rebellion, as he usually calls it. It changed his life. Of course, it changed history. John is going to be speaking at Davis Senior High School tonight at 7. He's joined us in the Insight studio now. Hi, John.
Hi. Glad to be here.
51 years since that night. How clear is it in your mind?
Oh, it's very clear. But I had already been for 7 years already as an activist in various movements. I was in the civil rights movement since the age of 13. So it was, I was not in the bar. I was down the street a block away, and people were making noises and running from there, and I hear the police engines and noises. And so I went towards it. And what I found was people protesting the police and the police having things tossed at them and the police kind of in shock. And they went into the bar they had just raided for shelter. And I and three other guys took this loosened parking meter out of the ground and used it as a battering ram on the doors to get to the police.
You were 20 years old.
I was 20.
Do you remember the sense of what was happening, whether it was pivotal, where your own adrenaline, your desire to fight were at that time?
Well, it was based on anger and having been treated so badly. And it was an opportunity for me to join with other gay people. I had never seen gay people before fight the police. And it was wonderful. And was wonderful for me to see the police in fear. It was a change in relationships that had been going on in my life for many years. So where before I was always the one in fear, and now the visible person representing the persecutors was in front of me being fearful of me.
What was your life like then at 20? What had you experienced? Where was fear? Where could you go or not go?
Well, I was born and grew up in Harlem, New York, in great poverty. And so I had less access to places, having no money. And so for poor kids my age who are gay, we were basically having to live on the streets, find places to meet each other. I had basically people I met just wanted sex with me, and that was it. Or we were meeting in the worst places that you could find in Manhattan. There was we met in an area of deserted piers and in meat trucks that in the daytime were used to transport meat, which really smelled. And that's what we had. And they didn't even leave us there alone. They kept chasing us and beating us up with nightsticks, et cetera. So it was, you know, when I was young, growing up, I was mentally sick. I was morally for hell. And I was criminal. So when you grow up as a kid, that's a pretty heavy thing to face. My parents were heterosexual, and so they didn't understand my feelings too much, but I won them over. I told them when I was 13 I was gay, and my mother cried for a week, and then she got over it, and my dad just made sure I didn't get into any trouble. But there was no community. There was no gay centers. There was no billboards. There was nothing positive. It was all negative. If you ever heard anything, it was always negative. And so what was important was not just Stonewall itself, but I helped organize the first meeting of the Gay Liberation Front. And I was on the board of Alternate U and provided the space and chaired the meeting so that we would not just have a gripe session, that we'd actually form a group and we would change history. So we took the name Gay Liberation Front. So that's how gay became so well known. Mm-hmm. And everywhere in the world now knows what gay means. It means more than just happy. And so we had no idea if the police could have thrown us all in jail. We had no idea what the future was. To me, it was Stonewall at the time. We just had a rebellion for 4 nights. but I had no knowledge it was going to turn into what it had. I did take part and help organize the first Pride Parade that's been held every year since and all around the world. But all these things were, never before held kinds of events. When we held the first march, the police wouldn't let us march. They blocked the streets. And so we had to run up the streets around and get past them, and we had to push through them two or three times just to get up to the rally, where there's no rally. We didn't have any rally. We didn't expect to get there. So it's all been quite remarkable. The lesson basically is that if you want to achieve something, you probably can if you organize with other people. There's nothing that can't be done, and there's nothing that can't be changed. Ideas can't be stopped, and it's a question of you knowing how to promote those ideas.
You said in the beginning a lot of what was happening was fed by anger, and certainly there was a willingness to be violent if needed. Does change, does a revolution have to have that as a component at the beginning? Will it always have anger and violence and rioting and rebellion?
No. Throughout history, it's been a mixture. For instance, for women's rights, it began when women were denied the right to vote as delegates at the World Abolition Conference in London, England in 1840. And Elizabeth Cady Stanton came back, and she formed the organizations out of first organizing the Seneca Falls Convention in 1848. And so the violence was, of course, on those women. Those women many times were attacked physically. But, you know, the only time they think of violence, a lot of people, is when the oppressed are doing the violence. So when I was a child, there was lots of violence on me, psychological violence. You know, it's hard to explain, but, you know, when you can't even tell your parents most of the time. I mean, I was an exception, but most people would never tell their parents. There was no one to talk to. There was fear of being found out was the overwhelming thing in their lives. So that's psychological violence.
Can I pause you there? Why were you so willing, so courageous to talk about your sexuality at age 13 or as openly as you continued to do from then on?
Well, because I was always advanced for my age. I've been in leadership positions of many organizations and done many things just because it's me. I usually don't take no, and I want to change things. And I come from a place where you couldn't go any further down. So where I grew up was in the worst poverty in New York. And so it was these old tenements from the Civil Wars. My bathtub was the kitchen sink. It was really bad, rats, all kinds of stuff. My parents were immigrants, and so we had very, very little. So there was nothing to lose for me. I had no creature comforts that I had to worry about going and fighting the police because of, you know, I'd lose my job. I didn't have a job, okay, at that time as a kid. The jobs I had were very low-paying jobs. You know, I used to go do dumpster diving on Wednesday nights on Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue to resell items to get money just for the family to take care of. Because they would have these, they throw out the furniture, which included broken vases, but the lids were sterling silver. So, I mean, they had the money. So I mean, I grew up in a very, I never finished high school because I was active in the civil rights movement. I was down south in Greene County, Alabama, and Sunflower, Mississippi. I mean, the civil rights movement saved me. I got involved with the NAACP at the age of 13. I joined the Harlem branch to help others, and actually it helped me. So I went on to other groups outside the NAACP, more militant, like CORE and SNCC. But that helped save my life because it's just very strange that, and I wanted to help people, it actually helped me. So I interacted with a lot of other people from other classes, and I learned a great deal.
Did you feel during most of your life feral in a way, or have you felt grounded with the people around you becoming family at different times?
I grew to find a new family. My parents were supportive, and they were wonderful and loving, but they were not from a book culture. The only book in my family was the Bible. And so my interacting with other people, I could choose and pick my family and people who are more supportive and people who are more understanding of what I was about, because my life has been about trying to change and help others.
Hmm. You are listening to John O'Brien. He is on his way later today to a free presentation at Davis High School. In fact, it's at 7 p.m. this evening, and he's been spending time with us in our studio. Hasn't been to Sacramento much, but you were even an activist. You helped actually organize an important event in Sacramento.
Well, we had the first statewide march for gay and lesbian rights, and so I was involved with that. I also took part in the anti-nuclear protest up here against Mount Diablo, the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant, and things like that. So I've been involved in labor movements and housing and the farm workers for a long time, and lots and lots of different causes, the environment, et cetera.
Because we went back to women's involvement and the suffragette movement, and this year is an important anniversary with the ratification of the 19th Amendment, how present were women in the early gay rights movement? And let's go back to the late 60s into the 70s.
Well, women played an essential, important role in a number of movements who were lesbians. I mean, the women's movement, much of the leadership was lesbians. And in the labor movement, a lot of the women leadership that provided things like an 8-hour day and safety standards and were all lesbians. So they played an important role. But the thing is, they did it in those other movements. Inside of the community, it was a divided community in certain places. So in small towns like this, men and women would come together who recognized each other, and there would be interaction that way. Where I was, there was very little interaction between the men and the women, because first of all, the women had to face the fact they were Maya isolated. As gay boys, you can go out and you can meet other gay boys in the street. It was not possible if you were a young woman to do that. It was very dangerous. You wouldn't be out at nighttime looking around for people. It was very, very dangerous. So women were more isolated. So it was joining together of gays and lesbians that strengthened our movement. And the Gay Liberation Front did that. It was men and women, even with the differences. And those were profound differences, dealing with men having to get over their sexism. So, you know, that there was a lot of attitudes that a lot of these gay men had growing up. They had a lot of privileges. Some of them were white, so as how they saw people of color. They were men, so they didn't, you know, they looked at women not as equals or even better. I myself am a feminist. I really don't like the patriarchy. I think that women should be in leadership far more than the men. We need far more women leadership than we do what we've had. The world has not been that great, and it's, you know, it's time that the guys maybe step back and let women who are more nurturing and who are less into the top down want to do things. The main thing is that unless you see the connections with people, you're going to continue to be a small part of it. So what we did is we got involved in supporting the women's movement very much, because it was very connected to the whole idea of sexual rights and freedoms. And I learned a lot from very strong women, not only in the gay and lesbian movement, but prior in the other movements. I was in the peace movement and the civil rights movement. But there were some different issues, because, you know, a lot of men were privileged. They got more per hour for wages, you know, just because they're men, you know. So women had less money generally, okay, so they had less resources. And if they had children, you know, it was an extra burden, you know, of being taken care of. So there's economic problems keeping women from being active. You know, if you're taking care of kids, it's harder to be active. You can't be out in all the meetings because you're trying to be a nurturer and taking care of people. So a lot of women were playing these invisible roles in their lives. And it was easier if you're a guy to be out there protesting.
So we've been talking about men and women in sort of an adult sense. And you're speaking tonight at a high school, two students, and there are going to be all kinds of ages of kids there. What's your message to kids? And why is it that you don't often say yes to speaking engagements like this?
Well, I think the message we're going to try to get across for young people today, because I'm speaking to the school at noon and then later this evening again, is to motivate them that they can accomplish anything they set out to do, that they shouldn't be feeling rejected or alienated, that to accept the world the way it is. Young people is what makes change. When you get older, you accommodate, you get goods, you get jobs, and you start to then to adapt and accept wrong. When you're young and you don't have anything, you see clearly what's wrong, and you're willing to stand up against it because you have less to lose. So I think it's important for these young people to understand their role, which is they're going to make the changes. We need to deal with climate change. Their lives are on lifeline right now on that issue. So it's important that they get involved in personally taking care of their futures. So my whole motivation is going to be around that, of their respecting themselves, understanding the insecurities of growing up as a youth, you know, and all that comes with that, and the isolation, the fears, and overcoming those fears. And that's my life. If I can overcome where I come from, then I think it's just about anybody can just move ahead and achieve.
We only have a few minutes left, but I just want to cover a couple things. You just said that as you get older, you become more willing to accept what's wrong and live with that. Do you feel that happening to you?
Oh, no. No, I've remained an activist. There are older people who have kept to the course and want progress and progressive change. Bernie Sanders is somebody I know who has stayed that course his whole life. There are many good people out there who've done that. But generally, it's when you get older and you get goodies and comforts, you more adapt and accept and feel you can't make change as much. You get more accommodate and conform. And so that's why it's so important for youth to be out there in the front to make those changes.
I'm just doing the rough math. Could I ask, are you 71?
Yes.
You are. You seem a lot younger than 71.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just your presence, your thinking, your speaking. One last question. Stonewall was 1969, that first big gay pride or big rally was in 1970. Sacramento's mm-hmm. was in 1980. There was a lot of change happening mm-hmm. then. By comparison, is the amount of change now still as significant and forward-moving?
It is still moving forward, and it's moving forward in many countries because the gay and lesbian movement is not just based in the United States. It's worldwide. And so I was also in the leadership of the 79 March on Washington and in the 87 March on Washington and in the statewide coalitions against the Briggs Initiative and everything that's going on for the past 50 years. And I basically have been behind the scenes. I've not been visible to the non-gay community, and that was for strategic purposes because I did not need to know have our enemies know who I was. So that's why it's hard to find me or to see me. But I really am really here and who exists. And the times have now changed enough that I can come forth more openly and speak. And but we have a long way to go for humanity. Women still are mistreated. Violence is in their lives, the threats of violence. So little has changed on that. We have a lot of work to do. And racism has made that continues to divide us, you know, Native American peoples and the conditions mm-hmm. they're in. So we have a long way to go. And those young people are going to have to be helping us to get where we want to get to.
Thank you, John, for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
John O'Brien is a lifelong civil rights activist. He is one of the leading participants from the Stonewall Rebellion of 69. He's speaking at Davis Senior High School tonight at 7, which is a free public address. We posted more background at capradio.org/insight. That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Tomorrow, by the way, is California Governor Gavin Newsom's State of the State address. You're going to hear Insight at 9 and then a live special broadcast from 10 until noon. This is a joint effort by Capital Public Radio and KQED. You will hear the coverage of the governor's address from 10 till noon. I hope you'll join us. Until then, thanks for joining us today.